This is Ramsey Radio, the farming and farm machinery podcast from Ramsey Brothers, partnering farmers since 1950.
And welcome to Ramsey Brothers Podcast, a new program that we're kicking off for Australian farmers and South Australian farmers in particular. My name's Tim Glover and I'll be your host, and it's our plan to bring you a wide range of topics and special guests. If you know Ramsey Brothers, you'll know we live and breathe farm machinery. It's what we do. We'll certainly be bringing you plenty of machinery insights in the podcast series, from equipment reviews to conversation with industry insiders. But Ramsey Radio will be a lot more than that too. We're keen to cover any subject that matters to farmers, and we know that goes further than what you drive. So it's a great industry we're involved in, and there's always plenty going on. Today's theme is no doubt a hot topic, and a topic that every grain grower discusses. How much am I going to earn from this season's harvest? Well, let's find out with today's special guest. Excited to have Paul Lange, Operations and Grower Services Manager for South Australia's own Centre State Exports. Paul, welcome to Ramsey Brothers Radio and our first podcast.
Thanks very much for the invitation. This is something that I've never done before, which is a podcast. So appreciate the chance to do it.
Well, when we did have a brief discussion the other day, I had alerted you that it was going to be our first edition as well. So, mate, we're both in virgin territory, but looking forward to it because there's plenty to talk about. Firstly, Paul, Centre State Exports shares a great deal in common, I guess, with someone like Ramsey Brothers in terms of being a family-owned South Australian company. Can you let our listeners know a little bit more about who you are and who Centre State Exports are?
So we are rare, I guess, in our industry nowadays, Tim, in that we are a family-owned operated business. Where the business started was with Dad originally, and B.L. Lange & Co. with IAMA back in the day, and the grain trading business was a bit of a spin-off in the early days. Since then, my brothers and I have been involved with the business along with our business partner, Jeff Voigt, and the business has grown from there. Obviously, deregulation of the cereal market was big because our business has been built around pulses and canola and the like. But once the market opened up, opportunity came with that. And we're proud to say that we're still the same guys that we were 25 years ago when this business really came to what it is today. So as Ramsey Brothers, to be honest with you, the similarities are fantastic and very good reason why I was happy to be involved with this, because we are doing the same thing, more or less, as dealing with farmers. And I think that a lot of farming operations have that comfort because they're dealing with family as well. So it's very similar.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that you make that, obviously a lot's transpired and a lot's changed since Centre State Exports and like Ramsey Brothers was founded. But it's interesting the comment you make about, the values and the way that you run the company, even with the growth that's happened, is, still in those foundation roots that happen at the start. So certainly something we live by here. And the point you make there is super pertinent about the growers that we deal with, and collectively we deal with them. There is a comfort, I think, in knowing that they're dealing with a family-owned and operated company. It does make a difference.
Certainly. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
So beautiful. So as I said, excited to have you on, and plenty to talk about in the grain market. But I guess let's start with a bigger picture, and from our perspective and from the listener's perspective, sometimes it's just a friendly reminder, but what are the factors that drive export grain prices, and what are some of the factors people don't often think of?
So I guess the last probably 18 months, certainly last harvest and now this harvest, we've gone back to what we see more traditionally in South Australia, which is an export-driven market. It does simplify things from a pricing standpoint, because we all know where we're working towards a port price rather than in these drought markets where we've had this situation where you've got a rail price going east this way, a truck going into Queensland, into Victoria, it becomes really messy. But the direction is very much about export, which is wonderful. Obviously, the currency always comes into play and has been fairly positive for us generally lately. Sea freight, container freight is a big one for some of the smaller commodities, which has been a real battle. We'll go into that later on. Obviously, we're always looking at international futures prices. We've got capacity of shipping here. So last year at times, there was probably a limitation. We had more grain than we can get out the door at a timely manner. And probably the one that is a little hard to gauge at times is the dynamics between feed grains and biofuel demand, for example, but they're factors that come into play. And then the one that's probably been the talking point on barley and lentils, particularly lately, has been tariffs, which probably are arguably one of the hardest things to try and manage or monitor. It's the intervention by government is just, it's just really difficult. And obviously we all know China and Bali, and we can talk about that as well, but the lentil tariff into India being dropped recently has been a really big boost for the lentil market. So there's a series of factors that come into it. Probably for this year at the moment, the competitively priced on wheat, for example, around compared to other parts of the world, we are going to have production. Probably the limiting factor again at this stage, if the crop keeps going the way it's going, Tim, is going to be shipping again. It's going to be that capacity to load a boat.
Well, it's interesting that you raised that. There was something that I wanted to raise. So, you know, we're seeing that now from our end with importing as opposed to exporting. But shipping for us is and our suppliers is exceptionally problematic.
It really smashed the container market last year for pulses. Fortunately, we did have a good demand in some bulk vessels, which we at Centrestate, we've been working on that for 5 or 6 years now, where we see, for example, for the Eyre Peninsula farmer over at Lincoln, why, you know, if we can load a bean boat or a lentil boat or a hatch of out of Lincoln rather than freighting all that grain back around into Adelaide to put in a container, there's huge advantages. So we've been actively working on that for a number of years because we see an opportunity for our customer. We see an opportunity for the Eyre Peninsula farmer, and for that matter, the York Peninsula farmer, we've been doing it as well. But last year, that sort of expanded, and we saw quite a bit more bulk vessel demand for lentils and beans than we'd normally see. Wonderful, because otherwise, I don't know how the hell we were going to move that crop. It was going to be a real trouble. What we're finding now is although there is that the container movement is slowly freeing up, it's still going to be nowhere near what we need by harvest time. And what we're doing again now is trying to encourage some of our customers to say, hey, let's be the first boat loaded. Let's get some early pulses away and really trying to concentrate again to see if we can get that bulk vessel trade to happen again. Otherwise, it's a bit of a nightmare, really. And a lot of farmers listening would have noticed that, particularly the guys from, say, the York Peninsula, where a lot of them are geared up to go and to get into the container packing plants. They have their on-farm storage. They've got their trucks. They've got all their gear. And I guess my advice, if you want to call it advice, is just don't put your blinkers onto that. We find if there's an opportunity down the road at Ardrossan or at Wallaroo, I know, you know, there's some hesitancy with Viterra with lentils, but at the end of the day, if that's where the demand is, it's crazy to put them on a truck and cart them all the way to Adelaide just because that's what you do. So,
yeah, and I think the point you make there is, you know, given the current environment that we're in, you know, a little bit of wider vision and a bit more lateral thinking is probably going to come into play more so than it has for a number of years.
I think what I find with farmers with on-farm farm storage is that they think they need to be full to be working. And in my opinion, if they're empty, they're actually working because it means that you've sold your grain and you got your money. It creates a lot of flexibility when it comes to things like storing lentils and cleaning lentils or even any grain that is. It comes with an added responsibility as well and a bit more risk to some degree, ensuring that you're maintaining it well. But at the end of the day, like I said, well, we loaded this boat out of Wallaroo last year, and a lot of guys that had been carting lentils direct into Adelaide for years and years were like, wow, this is great because Wallaroo's just there, you know. So
absolutely. And it's the economies of scale thing. So some interesting points that you raise, and I guess, you know, one of the things we quite often talk about, the ag game, is that wouldn't it be nice that if one year all the stars align, we had good season, good pricing, good yields, good accessibility to freight to move things on. But, you know, again, I think it's probably what makes this industry as exciting as it is, the challenges that we deal with. So interesting to note that transport could potentially create some dramas moving forward.
I will have to say the stars aligning comment, Tim, I've got to say that we're as close as we've been for a while. Like right now, my job's actually really quite pleasant because I'm talking to blokes that have got a smile on their face at the other end of the line that, you know, like crop's good, prices are good, outlook's good. You know, probably the biggest stress at the moment has been getting your ear if you didn't have it. But outside of that, you know, most people are pretty happy. Now, I'm not saying everyone, and certainly there are still a couple of pockets in this state that really need, I mean, they've got a crop, but it's only just hanging in there, like the Northern Mallee, and we'll talk about that if you like. But you know, most districts, this is as good as we've seen on all fronts at the moment. So fingers crossed that continues, I suppose.
Yeah, I must admit, I did a drive across most of the state last week, and it's your point there. It's looking as good as I've seen it for a long, long, long time. And there is, you know, there's always going to be those isolated pockets that are struggling. Yep. And I guess that's part and parcel of the business we're in. And certainly, we have a lot of those guys that we deal with ourselves. So, but you are right, you know, the stars are aligning in terms of where we're at, I guess, across the state. Your comment about it being as good as it's been for a long time is very pertinent. So moving on, and I guess we're talking South Australia, you know, and you've made the comment a couple of times that things are looking good. So in terms of how our harvest is shaping up and how you see that influencing prices, you know, is there anything in particular that you notice or are, you know, in particular watching some facet of that?
I guess right now what we're seeing is a bit of an arm wrestle between what is expected to be a big crop and could potentially be an enormous crop in Australia versus having primarily two major production areas in the Northern Hemisphere in Black Sea, mainly Russia and Canada and North America, having production issues. So our grain as a result of the last few years has been competitively priced. It remains to be competitively priced. At some point, we'd like to think that the international trade's going to go, well, Australia's going to have it, no one else is not, so we're going to see some added demand come here, and we are seeing that to some degree. But the limitation will be then again is that shipping component. If we've got more than we can push out the door, locally in South Australia, that dynamic is changing, and what I mean by that is obviously we all know that it's traditionally always been by Tira. Obviously, a lot of your customers on the Eyre Peninsula have got more opportunities popping up with the likes of T ports and whatever happens with the other two ports. I'm not sure where they're at with those two. We've got cargo in Adelaide now with their ship loader doing boats, and obviously Semaphore Grain have been loading bulk vessels down there. So there is actually a greater capacity than what there was, say, 3 years ago for shipping all at once. What that then does, though, is puts pressure back onto the freight component because we've got no bloody trains running around anymore. Well, very few, a lot less. So the road freight becomes a real issue. From the grower's point of view, where do I see the market by then? I guess internationally we're starting to get some feeling as though the bad news is getting factored in now. Like, okay, we've seen a hell of a rally again on the wheat just recently, which has been wonderful, but there's got to be a limit as to what they're willing to pay. So I guess from that standpoint, if we do find that the harvest ends up being as big as what we think it could be, and the farmers still seeing a competitive price, that's where we see that harvest pressure scenario. I know it's a bullshit term and I don't like using it myself, but it is. It's reality. What it is the buyers that I'm talking to only want to buy so many ton today.
Yep.
The farmers are all lining up at once, wanting to sell it all at once, and you get to the end of the day and there's more there than what the customers want. And then naturally, he's going to say, well, I want the price to be $2 lower tomorrow because it's supply and demand. I guess what we're finding, though, is more and more are gaining confidence now to do some forward selling. And I guess that's where that cash flow strategy comes into it. I've got these contracts already done. I fill them. That gives me some diesel to put in my header. And then I can worry about marketing my grain after harvest. More and more are being a little more strategic like that, particularly when they've got the confidence in the season like now. So, yeah, so there's a few factors that will impact us locally, and there's a few balls in the air as to how they might fall. But as said, the general outlook is still pretty positive. I mean, the wheat price, the canola price, more so, has got a long way to fall. You know, there's some dizzy heights at the moment. So,
oh, absolutely. We'll touch on the grain shortly. It's interesting that I have almost given up on relying on the long-range forecasters and that sort of stuff. But, you know, currently we're still predicting a above-average rainfall to continue. So, you know, you talked about, what the potential is, and every single one that's listening to this podcast that's involved in grain production, you know, we use that word potential every season. But it is looking like slightly lower than average temperatures forecast, but certainly from a rainfall perspective and where we're at now and where we come out the other end, the potential is really as good as we've seen it for a long, long time.
Absolutely. And I think going back to I referred to the urea supply issue earlier, and I guess where the trade are seeing that having an impact along with the forecast for the season is the potential for a lower protein year for wheat. I think the newer varieties, Tim, have certainly improved the protein levels generally in our grain. Even with a soft finish last year, we still saw a lot of H1 and H2. Yep. The last few years, we've either had drought or a market where it just hasn't recognised or wanted to pay premiums for protein. It's all been going into what they call a feed market into Southeast Asia, which is basically ASW. So they're happy to pay ASW prices, but nothing more. This year, what we're seeing is predominantly locally affected is that the talk of tight urea supplies, expensive urea, so limited extra top-up happening, along with the forecast, the crop condition, there's an expectation we were going to see some more AS. So multi-grade contracts now are seeing a better, it's not brilliant, but it's improved spread for the H1s and H2s. And the ASW spreads are still pretty wide at those sort of 15 and 20 bucks. So, you know, the last 3 or 4 years, those spreads have closed up to be zero across the board. I guess the expectation now is that we're hoping to see some premiums for the hard, and it'll depend very much on what we produce. Outside of that, though, we are seeing internationally a little more demand than we had previously on some protein stuff. But at the end of the day, that's more about what goes on in our backyard. And that's where, again, the farmers that are doing their forward multi-grade contracts can then manage those grades. Everyone gets all sorts of grades every year and go, well, we can mix and match and maximise their return on their spreads, really. So,
it's a key point you make. It is taking that forward look to say we can lock away some multi-grade contracts and then concentrate with the rest afterwards. And from a machinery dealer's perspective, we're certainly seeing a lot more uptake of things like grain analyzers and that sort of stuff, which give them the onboard capacity to understand exactly what it is at any point in time, so they can, they can carry out that mixing and blending and that sort of thing to gain the best price. So, I mean, that gives us a little bit of an idea of what's happening in the wheat market. What about barley? What are you seeing with barley?
I guess, first of all, we'll refer to China, and, you know, ultimately, it's a non-market for us still. We're not seeing anything being traded into China in the way of barley. Obviously, their tariffs are too restrictive. There is a little bit of wheat going into China, but it's not of any great volume. Not what it could be, I should say. Ultimately, we have had the door open again for us into Saudi. So last year, Australia went from not winning a single Saudi tender for a long time through to winning just about all of it, certainly the lion's share in the last 12 months. Now, why that is, there's a couple of factors. One is general barley production had dropped off a little bit, but also where the void that had been left by Australian barley in China was getting filled by the Argentinians, the French, I think the Ukraine got some in there, and all of those countries would normally be feeding the Saudis. So effectively, we shifted the deck chairs around the card table. Net result is probably that we're not quite seeing premiums nor the expectations of the Chinese. But at the end of the day, by hell, it's a lot better than we thought it was going to be. And right here today now, if we go back to the current crop condition and our main competitors into those markets in terms of exports, you got Canada and Russia, the two countries that we've talked about and as well publicised as having trouble. So the barley outlook really is pretty good. Malt barley, look, being a dog's breakfast, we all know that. Everyone's seen it. There's two main factors in that for us here in South Australia. One is that when COVID hit, most of our malt barley goes to Southeast Asia. Most of them don't drink at home. They only drink beer while they're out. So when the COVID shutdown happened, beer consumption died, production died, and then the demand for the malt died. And it's taken a long time to the point where our biggest malt house in Adelaide, so bought malt, was Joe White's, as everyone know it as, they shut production completely. They just didn't take anything. So that created a bit of a backlog. But we are starting to see that open up a little bit again now. Interestingly, just a side note with malt barley, and is we're seeing more and more demand for sustainable malt barley. So we know about sustainable canola into Europe, but there's more demand for ICC malt barley now, which we see that as growing. Not necessarily a bad thing, because the audits aren't great, but they're not the worst thing in the world, and certainly find most farmers that go through them get through them no problems. But yeah, it's interesting how the end user is demanding some of these things, because that's what their customers are looking for, and it's breweries like Heineken that are looking for it, which is interesting. But generally, the outlook, Tim, for barley, I think, is still quite positive, to be honest.
And that's a real it's a real plus, given that I guess the last year when we saw the tariffs introduced in China, it was literally a kick in the guts and sent a lot of people into to panic almost. But it's interesting how it rides out, and there's a lot more that that will pan out. But I guess that's the plus, isn't it? You know, when you talk globally, the world's a big place, and while there was a lot of pundits suggesting that we had all of our eggs in one basket, it's amazing how other opportunities open up. So good news on the barley front, and. Yep. Again, I mean, there's going to be changes, and there's one thing that's for sure. COVID has it's taught us a lot of lessons, and it's also taught us to open our eyes up and just have a little bit of a broader look around the place. So good news, and it's a positive upside there. Canola, obviously, something's pretty important in South Australia and grown in some reasonable volume. Where are you seeing canola?
So the two sides of that discussion is, again, we'll talk about Canada. Biggest producers of canola in the world, biggest exporters of canola in the world. You know, they obviously their production is going to be smashed to bits, and it's probably shrinking as we speak. Canadian canola prices exceeded $1,000 more than once recently, but I guess we're seeing very much an inflated drought market over there. Europe, demand-wise, is where it's all at for us, and will remain that way for the foreseeable future. So part of the sustainable space I mentioned earlier is really driven by the European Union. They've got all these targets set for greenhouse gas emissions and sustainable production, and while they're doing that, they're making it harder and harder for the German and French farmer, for example, to grow the crop themselves with restrictions on chemicals and the like. So the outlook into Europe demand-wise is excellent for us for canola. They love our canola. There is a preference for non-GM, I will say, and I know some of the listeners are probably not pretty keen on the GM technology. The problem we have with Europe is that you can't, the rules are that GM product can't end up back in the food supply chain. So they can squeeze the oil out of it, but they can't feed the mule back to a cow. And that has a massive impact on the return for the importer or the manufacturer. And so they'll buy it, but it's generally at a discount. And it rarely happens. We haven't really seen much of non-GM out of Australia going, but most of the vessels are being loaded of GM. Most of the vessels are non-GM that are going out of Australia. Generally, overall, though, the outlook for canola is really good. And for us to be seeing prices of $900 forward, Tim, is just unheard of. Even, wheat, we might bring up lentils or everything. When we've seen these close to record or record prices previously, it's always out the other side of harvest, yeah. And it's always after a drought. And I can throw out a price as big as you like. If no one's got any bloody grain, it's irrelevant. But to have these high prices in a forward market when there's so much of the crop still to be sold is really unique and really quite positive. And I think most of the farmers listening should really be, pretty optimistic, I think, generally. All they got to do now is grow it. The easy part, really, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no problem. It's completely within our control. But it's an interesting point that you make, because the comment about it's normally north of harvest that we see these price rises and that sort of stuff. But to see it as early as we are now, exactly as you said, mate, it is exciting. And you mentioned the word, and they are doing some ridiculous things, certainly in the last couple of weeks. Lentils. What is going on with lentils?
It's a combination of what we've discussed, really, to be honest. So you've got a Canadian production that's shrinking by the day, and then probably where the market's blown up recently is harvest is actually well underway now, and there's no turning back. There's, it is what it is. So that's the driver. That is fundamentally the driver in the market at the moment. But as a result of that, the Indian tariffs that have been in place for 3 years now, 2-3 years, they reduced them dramatically about a month ago, roughly. And that is in a response to the fact that they knew that the Canadians weren't going to have the lentils they'd normally have. So right here, right now, we've seen a lentil price blow up by, easily 200, 250, potentially probably more. If you look at over the month, it's closer to $300. We have not so much, typically you have a lot of your smaller traders chasing DCT orders. What we're tending to find at the moment is more feels like positioning, where there's exporters, importers that are all saying, well, we don't know where this might end. Let's just make sure we've got something on the books. meantime, farmers are sitting there. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I've had one customer refer to it as a pokey machine that won't stop paying out because he'd planned to sell some lentils 3 weeks ago and changed his mind for a minute and now is about $300 up from where he was. So very positive. Outlook still very strong. How high can it go? Oh, it's hard. You know, currency has such a huge impact on when you're talking about a commodity worth over $1,000, you know, 1% is a huge in currency has a massive impact on price. So I think there's going to be a limit. And it does feel a little bit like a bubble at the minute, to be honest, that at some point, some of the trade, the guys that I'm referring to that are just making sure they've got some tons on the books, are going to get what they want in the books. But sitting here today, most farmers are not that active and for good reason, because there's a lot of risk before selling lentils. And as I say quite often, as every day they're closer to harvest, the more confidence they're going to have to sell their crop. But certainly love the outlook at the moment. And once again, it's just growing the things, really, with a kind finish. And you can see why I mentioned earlier that I think we're about as close as the stars aligning as we've seen for a while, Tim, to be honest with you, with a number of factors, which is really good, really good.
Yeah, I think no question at all when you look at what's happening and you look at some of those key grains and the markers and indicators of where they're sitting, you're right. It is super exciting and the alignment is taking place. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back with our special guest, Paul, and we'll summarise where we think the 2021 season will finish.
Want a better way to buy used farm machinery? Then make Ramsey Brothers the first place you go. Ramsey Brothers works hard to make buying used easy, with a one-stop service offering finance, transport, installation, operator training and ongoing support too. Don't let the tyranny of distance stand between you and the right machine for your job. Call a Ramsey Brothers branch today or go to ramseybrothers.com.au to view our full inventory. Ramsey Brothers used machinery. Great gear, legendary backup.
Welcome back to Ramsey Radio. We're talking today with Paul Lange from Centrestate Exports about what drives export grain prices and, most importantly, how the season's shaping up for growers. So, Paul, we've covered a lot in that first segment there, and some pretty exciting news and obviously at the same time some fundamental challenges that we're facing in the supply chain, you know, relating to the transport side of things. But taking all of that into account, and we've really discussed what we want to see happen here and abroad. What should we be hoping doesn't happen as we see at the end of harvest?
So I guess we are in the lap of the gods a little now, both in the Northern Hemisphere and here in terms of what happens. So, you know, what we would love to see happen is, and this sounds terrible, Tim, but it is the way that it is, that further issues with quality and quantity coming out of the places like Russia and Canada will only add fuel to the fire for us and give us a greater advantage. It's been spoken about that the Russians do have like a floating export tariff at the moment, which is actually a small advantage. So I'd love to see them apply more tariffs on themselves and push themselves out of the picture a bit further. I don't see that necessarily happening, but that is one factor. We'd love to see the dollar to drop too further. That would support everything across the board, obviously. I think ultimately what I would like to see now is our season to finish well. Old Jack Frost can go somewhere else for the year and a kind finish to have the production there so that we do have the opportunity. What we don't want to have is any of these tariffs like India's had to be increased or changed. Obviously, a stronger Aussie dollar doesn't help any of us. Well, obviously, if you guys got to import stuff, it might be a little bit different. But for us that are trying to sell the stuff, a lower dollar is the way that we really want to go. Yeah, I guess the concern, as I mentioned to you previously, the whole supply chain factor of getting the stuff out of the door. The last thing we want to see is some major issues with a port like Lincoln or out of harbour to stifle that flow, because it's going to be pretty critical to get it out the door this year. But I guess I will say, really, at the moment, that there's more positives than negatives, Tim, and it's going to take a fair bit of bad news, and probably the biggest threat would be a dollar, really, at the moment going up. Otherwise, the outlook's fairly positive, really.
It is positive, and I certainly concur with your comments around. Understand completely. The dollar being lower is fantastic for exporters, and I guess it's the double-edged sword, isn't it? You know, we deal in a market where we want our growers to maximise, as you do, their returns. But at the same time, as a machinery dealer, we get busted up constantly when price rises happen. So it's a fair point you make. And look, at the end of the day, you know, the lower Aussie dollar is certainly good for exports. And I guess that's a national picture as well. Whilst we're all heavily invested in the ag sector, you know, those exports, you know, when you talk about the oil markets and minerals and that sort of stuff, it is a good thing for Australia. So certainly. And 100% agree. It's, you know, in terms of where I think the positivity far outweighs any negative connotations at the moment. Absolutely. I think, you know, given what we've been through in the last couple of years, I think it's important that we, you know, we do what we can to maintain that positivity at the moment. It's we talked about the barley tariffs in China before and what a kick in the guts. We, as an industry, felt that last year. But, you know, fast forward 12 and a bit months and things are certainly looking a heck of a lot different. So, fantastic. So the big question, Paul, I've really enjoyed our conversation today and certainly some really pertinent things we've discussed. Summary, how should our growers be feeling at this stage of the game?
I think the general vibe or tone that I've been trying to set through the whole conversation, Tim, is it's positive. The outlook's good. I get asked this question a lot, as you can imagine, is where's the price going to be by harvest and what's going to be happening? Now,
I'll interject there and interrupt, and that's one question I haven't asked you because it's kind of like,
I love
how long's a piece of string? And you've been good enough to come on the show. I didn't want to put you in the gun.
No, I did open that can of worms, so I'll try and put a lid on it. Look, I think, like I said, there's too many factors for me to sit here and say I think wheat's going to be this price by harvest time. What I can say, though, is that it is definitely worth those that are comfortable to do some forward selling to be considering it and looking at it, because I think, again, the risk is that unknown of the harvest pressure and what that does to the market. And then the risk is that there's enough grain for sale at harvest to satisfy some shipping into the new year. So I think at current pricing, there's an opportunity there to stay out of that market if you want to, and certainly to hedge some exposure on the price. Having said that, though, I still believe that the outlook's positive enough for those that aren't comfortable with taking that position, that they're not really, it's not that, there's a long way for the canola price to fall from $900, basically. So even if it does drop $50, you're still going to be looking at a bloody good price. And if you're in the current scenario, you're more comfortable to watch, which we're finding a lot to do that. With lentils also, I must say, I don't see as a huge risk in that. So, yes, outlook's looking really good. And I think, the unknown will be just how good our crop is and what the quality is like. But, yeah, I think there's plenty of reason for optimism in our industry across the board, really, at the moment. It's, you know, we've been pretty lucky. Could be a lot worse, you know, when it comes to COVID and just about everything. Our game has been very fortunate. I'm very happy to be working in the industry I do, that's for sure.
All right. No question at all. It's although the downside, I'm sure, and we've all made this go, and it's been classified as an essential worker and an essential industry, has its pros and cons. But certainly at the moment, I concur exactly with what you're saying. You know, when we look globally, the way we're sitting in Australia, but, you know, in particular, and let's be close to home, where we're sitting in South Australia at the moment, with the way the season's shaping up and the good news that you're giving us and the good news that the market's giving us, you know, I think we've got plenty of reasons to be up and about. Interesting, just to touch quickly on your comments, and it happens every year, but, I mean, the speculation at the moment is, I guess that's, you know, that's driven a little bit by the way prices are going. And do I lock into a forward contract? Do I not? Do I on-farm store? Do I pre-sell? Yeah, they're probably the biggest dilemmas, I guess, that a lot of the growers are dealing with at the moment, just to take a position on what's going to suit them best.
You know, and I guess that's kind of my point being that we're probably in a fortunate position in that those that are comfortable to do that can secure what they want, but those that aren't, and understandably a lot aren't, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way, Tim. Look, everyone's got their own risk profile, what they're comfortable with doing, and I've said this for a long time. The bloke that lines up at harvest time and sells every grain off the header versus the guy that does swaps and all the different in-betweens and stores on farm, and if you looked at a 10-year average or a 20-year average, what they end up doing is probably not that different, provided they're consistent at what they're doing. And that's one thing I find that farmers in South Australia have got better at with their marketing, is that fresh after deregulation, it was like, well, how do we do this? And they were chopping and changing. Ford sell one year and not the next, and a store one year and not the next. And now I find more and more have become more comfortable, have a plan, I guess, and execute that plan. And I guess my point is that right here, right now, no matter what plan you've got, the outlook's pretty bloody good. So don't be too panicked about it if you haven't and you want to, and if you have and you're not sure. I think, you know, this is one of those years where it's going to be pretty hard to get it completely wrong anyway.
Absolutely. Well, Paul Lange from Centerstate Exports, thank you for coming on Ramsey Radio, as we said at the start, our first ever podcast. So, mate, awesome. It's been a pleasure having you on, and I've really enjoyed actually the conversation. So obviously completely pertinent to the business we're in. And it's always good to get someone on that we've got a positive spin on what's happening. So exciting times. I will watch with interest, and no doubt we'll keep talking. We might even do a follow up podcast after harvest when we understand what sort of yields we're getting, and we can discuss what we've talked about today. But as it stands, super informative, mate. Really appreciate your opinion, certainly based on many years. And as I said, great to have you on. And for all of our listeners, it's onwards and upwards. Sun's shining. There's still a bit of moisture around, so let's hope we can realise the potential that we'll be talking about today. All right, that's it from Ramsey Radio for now. If you enjoyed the program, be sure to share it with your social network and subscribe for future episodes. I'm Tim Glover. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Ramsey Radio, brought to you by Ramsey Brothers. Find this and all our podcasts on your preferred podcast app or on our website at ramseybros.com.au.